All right, we're back. Holy moly, this has been a journey. 5 sessions, 24 different tools, technologies, and services. And now we're to the point we have a mandate, folks, from Scott Guthrie to push all of this stuff out to Linux. And he said not just the ASP.NET Core application, he said data out there. So this is a perfect time to talk about Docker Azure Container Registry, which most people haven't seen in Linux. And I'm here with one of my favorite presenters of all time, Jeff Procise from Wintellect, that is a master in this area. He's gonna talk to us a little bit about this. And I'm here to make sure he doesn't say anything wrong, basically. Yeah? Well,
let me know if I do. So. Let me say a word or two about containers. And there's a diagram on a slide here you'll see in a moment, but I'd like to say more than what just the slide says. Question for you, Scott. Have you ever created a virtual machine?
Oh, yes, all the time.
Yeah, if you do mobile app development, mm-hmm. you're testing in a Windows Phone emulator, Android emulator, all that sort of stuff. You're spinning up VMs. In fact, most developers I know have machines with lots and lots of RAM.
I mean, yeah, honestly, I didn't even realize this at first, but I have a number of VMs that are spun up all the time when I'm doing development. Now I realize that I do mm-hmm. in Hyper-V, and that's why I have to maintain, I have 32 gigs of RAM on my laptop.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, so why do developers like to have 32 gigs of RAM? It's not that Excel is requiring that much, right? Mm-hmm. The reason they have it is because when we spin up VMs, VMs tend to be very heavyweight. I mean, think about this. I'm running Windows 10 right now on my laptop, mm-hmm. and I can spin up VMs on this laptop running Windows 10, Linux, Android, or what have you. But suppose I spin up another Windows VM. That's probably going to take 4 or 5 gigabytes of RAM, mm-hmm. at least, because there's a whole other copy of Windows in that VM. So VMs are great for emulating other environments, for things like that. But when what we're running in that virtual machine is on the same operating system as the machine that's hosting the VM, it seems like there's some waste there, mm-hmm. right? So, you know, VMs are big. They tend to require a lot of memory. VMs also are hard to move around. I mean, you create a VM from a VHD, mm-hmm. a virtual hard disk, and it's not uncommon for a virtual hard disk to be 80 or 100 gigabytes in size. Well, if I want to send you that VHD, sure, I can upload it to OneDrive, but that's going to be a pretty big yeah. download. So hey, here's something else that's a little bit suboptimal about virtual machines. They tend to not start very quickly because we're booting an image
long
of an operating
time,
system.
Typically.
Exactly right. So these are some of the reasons that containers have gotten so much mind share recently. With a container, it's kind of like a virtual machine in that we can package up software, even a file system and other assets, and we can run it in a very isolated environment. But guess what? Containers don't duplicate the entire operating system. So let's say I'm running code in a Docker container for Linux. And the code is written to run against Linux in certain libraries, for example. Mm-hmm. If that's running on a Linux machine, I don't have to load a whole other copy of Linux there. Same with Windows. Windows Server 2016, or Windows 2016 Server, supports Docker containers. So imagine this. Imagine I want to run software in that container VM-like environment, but I don't have to load an entire another copy of the operating system. Mm-hmm. My 32 gig machine might allow me to have a few Windows emulators running, but I might be able to run hundreds, even thousands of containers with that same configuration. Not only do they require less RAM because they're not duplicating the operating system, they're also easier to move around. The equivalent of a VHD, what we typically refer to as a container image, is typically orders of magnitude smaller. And guess what? They start faster, too. Mm-hmm. Why do they start faster? Because we're not having to boot an operating system. There's just much, much, much less stuff. Now, on the next slide, let me mention something called the Azure Container Service, which I have a feeling many of the people who are watching today have at least heard of. Maybe even some of them have used it. But it's a fairly new mm-hmm. feature of Azure. So here's what it does. There are several containerization platforms out there today in the world. But the most popular one by far is one called Docker. Mm-hmm. Docker is free, it's open source, it has tremendous mind share in the software development community. So suppose you wanted to take some software, package it into a Docker image so that it can run in a Docker container. Well, where is it going to run? Well, you can certainly create a Linux VM on your Windows machine and run that Docker container inside it. But what we'd really like to do is be able to run these things in the cloud. Azure Container Service is essentially an implementation of the Docker container stack. Is built completely on open source, no proprietary stuff, no anything else, which means that if you like to use the Docker CLI, the command line mm-hmm. interface, for creating and managing your Docker images and starting your Docker containers, it works with the Azure Container Service. You just set up an SSH tunnel from your machine out to Azure Container Service and execute a command or two to do some port forwarding from your machine. So in that Docker CLI, you type commands on your laptop mm-hmm. or your main development machine. It's actually
causing... And they're going against that remote instance.
Exactly. Yeah. They're traveling out mm-hmm. through that SSH tunnel mm-hmm. Up to Azure Container Service. But because it's all built on top of just open source Docker stuff, if you don't prefer the Docker CLI, there are a number of GUI tools for Docker. Anything that works with Docker today works with the Azure Container Service as well. So when I think about the Azure Container Service, I think of if I really want to run apps in Docker containers out in the cloud, Azure Container Service is just sitting there waiting to be used. I don't have to go spin up my own cluster. I don't have to install mm-hmm. Docker on any of those. It's just sitting there waiting to be used. So it's very, very cool.
And this is all the stuff that, because this is a new world to me. We've had this discussion before. I've been developing software for the Microsoft platform since Windows 2.0. So it's been a long time. Most of the work that I do is for Microsoft shops. It's for medium to large scale scenarios. In my environment, there's usually like a Linux guy out there. There's these folks out there that are not really part of my development world. And this is not just an area that I haven't understood, but I haven't been exposed to it. I haven't known what to do. And as things have started to move open source, and that Microsoft has been more embracing of these things, which is extremely smart, by the way. Mm. This is just a great, great move. Everybody wins in this. Started to move this direction, I started to get nervous, and my peers and colleagues have been nervous. They have openly said, I am worried about what this new world is. All I have is these Windows skills. How am I going to get along? What am I going to do? How am I going to manage this sort of stuff? And that's why so much of this stuff that's built into Visual Studio 2017 has been such a godsend, because we've got Docker that you just talked about. Docker, not only is it the coolest imagery, the best icon in the world, I would use Docker tools just because the whale is so cute.
You
right?
Like the whale.
I like the whale, but this is the standard, as you mentioned. This is the industry standard almost. It's the most common. And for those of you that have been using Visual Studio 2015, recent updates, if you got the Docker tools for Windows or any of those extensions, you may have seen the introduction of this Docker. It was just project support for Docker that you could add that would add some files. Well, Visual Studio 2017 takes this even farther and has this concept not just of Docker project support, but Docker solution support. And this is really important for orchestration, this concept of compose and orchestration. So now, not only can you have a project, but you have an entire solution where you have these pieces, separate projects or pieces of your solution that need to work in harmony. They may have dependencies on each other, whatever. They can now work in harmony through this solution support where you're not having to manage all of these pieces. So that would be cool enough. That would be cool enough if that was just added. But now people like me who've been out there doing it, because I've been curious and I've been forced to a little bit, I've gotten kind of good with Docker, right? I know that a PS will bring up containers, a flag A will show ones that all of them running or not, Docker images, Docker info, I can do all of these things, Docker run, Docker build, I can do these things. I've got a Docker Hub account, I can send stuff there, I can send stuff to ACS, Azure Container Services, I can do all of this stuff.
But wouldn't it be nice if it were a little less manual than it is today?
But my question has been, why should I do something like this that's fun for the first few times, but can totally be automated, right? Why am I spending my time doing things that could easily be automated? And this is one of the things that's so cool about Visual Studio 2017. I have the knowledge now to do all of these things by hand, but using Docker tools, the project support, and then this cool new concept that's in preview of an Azure app service to Linux, I can do something today. In fact, I can do something today that honestly 10 days ago I couldn't do, which is push stuff directly out to a Docker container running out in Linux with a click of a button. And this is just an absolute phenomenal blessing. Because again, I can do it, but why should I? So I'm just pretending people like me that are out there, the thousands of people like me that are out there that are on a contract or they've got a company that they're working for, they're writing software for them, people are starting to see the benefits and blessings of being perhaps on a Linux platform, Mac platform. Everybody is all of a sudden playing well. Everybody's playing well right now. Everybody's joining each other's consortiums, right?
Don't you love it when we all get along?
Yeah, I do. I almost want my own consortium to see who joins it. But now we have this concept of, in order to do this so easily, my peers, my colleagues, I've been able to demonstrate some of this cool stuff to them and show them how easy this is. It's, don't be afraid. Really, watch. You don't think this is simple? Watch. And I will just kind of be like, ho hum, la la la, click, done. So recently, this concept of Azure Container Registry has been introduced. And this is not exactly true, but it's kind of true that if you think about the Docker Hub, it's kind of acting as that. So we have the ability now, we used to kind of have to go to the Docker Hub and then to Azure Container Services. Now we can just go right to a container registry. The cool thing about Azure Container Registry is once again, just like with function apps and everything else, they have standard app service settings. And really what's happening, it's going to create and push a Docker container out to Linux based on a Docker image. And the web app will run natively on Linux. So, at the mandate of Scott Guthrie, I think we need to show that here, do that here.
Let's show those tools in VS 2017.
Let me just flip right over and let's just get this going here, because this is just a really cool part. So up until now, remember, every single thing that we've been doing has been on Azure SQL, SQL Server 2016. It's been all Windows-based, running here locally. The first thing that we need to do in our solution is, we don't have to do this, we can do it manually, but why do it manually is I can just say add Docker project support now. So I could say Docker solution support, and since I only have this one project, I don't need to. There's some other aspects, but in general, I can just say Docker project support. We'll let that go, and I'll talk about a couple of the things that it does. So that's going to load stuff up here.
So at one point here, I think we're actually going to see the Docker CLI come up, right? We're going to see some commands get executed, kind of run by us. But the bigger point is that's a result of actions we're taking in Visual Studio, which is abstracting some of the details of this process away. But there's still a Docker file there, right?
There's still a Docker file. In fact, let's just go out and take a look at it. So here we go. Docker file support has been added. And in general, let me show you what it's done to your solution. So we have this Docker file. Anybody that's familiar with Docker, this looks familiar. This Docker file looks familiar. These can go crazy. You can do all kinds of stuff in a Docker file, but this is what's going to be looked at, basically. when we're going to build this. So we've got this working directory setting saying expose 80, copy this, you know, here's the entry point to this, you know, this kind of stuff. It's very simplistic here. You can change this manually, but most scenarios you don't need to. It's also created this Docker compose. Anybody that's familiar with using Docker will understand what's happening here. One thing you may not realize it's doing, though, is it's adding something to my launch settings. Remember, all ASP.NET Core apps are actually just console apps that load up in a web application. We had this IIS profile. We had that sort of console project application template from the beginning of the session. But now it's added this new cool Docker run profile in order to run it in Docker. And you see what's going to happen here, Jeff, is I'm going to be running a Docker container on my machine, and it's actually going to create, the Docker tools are actually going to create a VM. I pulled this up just so people would see. If you notice out here, a little tiny here, but I've actually got this VM that's called Mobi Linux VM out here. This is set up by Docker. I didn't do anything out here. This is very similar to if I'm running, an Android emulator, Windows Phone emulator, any of these out there, they're going to spin up these VMs out there. You can also notice that it's pretty tiny. The assigned memory is tiny, and it's not really doing much, which I love. It just really starts up quickly. So now...
And that one tiny VM could potentially host hundreds of container instances as well.
So this is important, too. Yeah, I'm not having to spin up tons of those.
No.
Just that.
So the idea here is that you can test this thing running in the container locally in that Linux VM, but ultimately you'll push it out to Azure.
Exactly, and I can know that when I do this here locally, I know that if it works here, it's going to work out there.
Sure.
Because everything is going to be exactly the same. If it works here, it works out there. So one thing that I've actually done in this project is, viewers may not have noticed, but I actually have had this little Windows icon up in the top that showed that we were running on Windows. If this loads up in Linux now, Not only is it going to be run on Linux, but it's going to change that icon and show us a description of that there. So now if I load up Docker, if I click the Docker run icon, so this happens sometimes. This is an RC build thing. I'm just going to wait for a second. If you get this prepare for compile task, every once in a while I have to shut down, but it's usually the first time that you run it. But then I'll just run that again. We'll just wait one more time here. I'm only rebuilding the solution because I'm bored. There we go. And now let's run it here. And so what's going to happen here is it's actually going to load that up, and I will actually be running this ASP.NET Core app in Linux. So I'm not just faking it. This isn't just pretending. This will really be running in Linux when I pull this
up. In a Docker container hosted on Linux in a Linux VM. So honest to goodness, running on Linux. First time we've seen this, right? Because up until now, this app has been running on Windows, whether it's running locally here or running out of the cloud.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so now you'll notice that I have, instead of the Windows icon, I've got this cute little Linux icon. And it says, let's see if we can see here. Currently running on Linux 4.4.2.7 Mobi. So this is running in Linux. So I'm on Windows 10, and it's running in Linux. So you saw how amazingly simple that was. And so this has been simple for a little while. People that have been using the Docker tools have experienced some version of this before. But let me tell you what was not simple up until just a few days ago. What was not simple now is me saying, take this and stick it out somewhere public. Right, let me put this out there somewhere public. People that are really good at this, when I say it's not some a simple way, people that are really good at this say, oh, it's always been simple. All you have to do is just do this command, then this command, then this command, then this command, then this command.
Yeah, you're right.
And
go into the portal and, configure an Azure Container Service along with all kinds of stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. It is simple, but it's way too many steps. What I want to do is I just want to click a button because I'm lazy. So now if I go to publish, now that I've added Docker support and go to publish, I can say new profile, and I can say an Azure App Service Linux preview. If you guys can see that, that's going to show up. Now I'm going to go through and show you a couple of configuration things here, but then I'm actually going to bring in a publishing profile that I already created. And that's only because when you go in through this direction, I wanted to show you guys what it looks like going through fresh and clean. when you go through this direction, it doesn't want you to connect to an existing app service. You usually have to create a new app service, because the way that you publish to an existing app service is you download the publishing profile. So I'll say Azure App Service, and notice with this dialog now, a lot of this will look familiar if you've been publishing to Azure App Services. What's the web app name? It's going to give me a suggestion there, a resource group I could connect, select connect resources, a plan. But we've got this new container registry that shows up. So I could connect to an existing registry, and I've created one. I called one for this series, Connect Registry. Or I could actually select a new one and create a new registry, Azure Container Registry, out there. And it's going to provision all of that stuff for me. So what I'm going to do real quick is I'm going to just pull in, I'll close that, and I'm just going to pull in an existing one here that I've got from probably have it from one of these backups. Let's see here in properties. All right, so I'm just going to pull this one in here. This is one that I walked through the tool. I walked through the tool and it created this for me the first time I did it. And I'll just paste those in there. And let's see, I don't want both of those actually, but that's okay there. Okay, so that should be fine. So if we just take a look at this, this is going to look very similar to your publishing profile XML files just for Azure. There's just a couple more changes to it, right? Like we've got this Connect registry and everything else. But so now what we've done is now instead of going to, because I want people to see the difference, now instead of going to tagger.it, people can go to both versions. They'll be able to go to linux.tagger.it and they can see. They can experience. They could have browsers side by side, go on a Mac, go on whatever you want, browser side by side. They can see how these things are running exactly the same. The only thing that would change is if you're running in a different browser, you might have something different. So let's just see if this is going to work. Once again, we don't know if any of this is going to work. This is just all off the cuff because we're like that.
Would you do me a favor?
Yeah.
Turn your phone off so Guthrie doesn't call again.
Yeah, let me just definitely make sure I do that.
Because we don't want any more added to our list
today,
right?
I don't want any more added to the list. Because I have a feeling this is going to work, because I know it's going to work. But when this happens, this is going to be really cool. You guys that are watching out there, yes, I know if you've been watching sessions yesterday and the day before, you know about some of this stuff. What you have not seen ever is all of these pieces put together. All of these pieces done in such a short period of time. All of these pieces put together and then just everything set out. I mean, we're making history here. I mean, the moon landing was kind of big, but I mean, they didn't do this. They didn't do this.
Let's see Neil Armstrong do this.
All right. Yeah, he can't.
He's my hero, by the way.
So now if I say publish, I've got this Tagger Linux one. Remember, this button looks like this just because I'm on large font. It doesn't really look like that in real life. Now if I say publish, we're going to keep our fingers crossed. Here's what should happen. It should go out to that container registry that's attached to that Linux app service. It should load up and should run at linux.tagger.it, and we'll see if we can use that there. And here's what I'm going to do, if this works. So just for the folks that are watching this, this takes a second here to get going. We're actually going to see a Docker window. I don't know if this is the way it's going to be in the final version, but right now, this is going to happen. We're going to see a Docker window come up. This publish button is going to say disabled. So when you're doing this at home, doing this on your own, you're going to say, is this stuck? Yeah, so we've got this Docker window that's coming up. It's saying it's pushing it. I mean, so you Docker folks, this looks familiar. I know it. You can even see the cute little whale icon up here. You know this is Docker window. And then this button is going to stay disabled for a few seconds. And if you're trying this for the first time, you're going to think, is this stuck? Did it not do anything? You see how this button is disabled right here? It's actually setting that up. It's going to reset the site for you. And then it will load the browser automatically for you. So when the browser loads, if we cross our fingers.
I can imagine in the cloud right now, a Linux VM is being created or perhaps pulled from a pool of existing Linux VMs. Mm-hmm. But then there's a Docker stack installed in that Linux VM, so they're having to create a container, load that image into it. So But in a moment, we should see.
Well, so there we go. So I've got this on ultra big 175% zoom. Let's just go to regular. So here we are. We're actually external. I'm at https://linux.tagger.it. Everybody out there can hit this now if they want to. You can see that this has changed a little bit now. Now I'm running on Linux 44045 generics number 66 Ubuntu, which is really cool. But I want to go see if this search is going to work out here, because I love using this bot. I love thinking that this bot is going against this one. So now I'm going to say hi. You think there are any tags for Guthrie? I actually don't think that there are. So I'm going to say find. How about find car images? We'll just try that. Find car images there. There we go. Car images pulling up there. So that works. That's it. We've got it. So this is another scenario where I would clap. I wish I was in front of an audience, but we just pushed all of that over. But there's one more piece.
What about the data?
What about the data? So I'm going to close that. Let's do the same thing we did before, and we'll make it quick for our folks. So we've got all that data that exists in that Windows version. Let's pull that down. Go to that database.
Excuse me.
And again, if we have the bug here, we might need to add this again, but we'll just see here, refresh. Because we could actually push it from anywhere. While we're waiting for that, I can see if I can push from here. I'm just going to try and push it from whatever wants to load first in this release candidate here. We'll just say properties. We're going to remove that. So we're getting this login failed because it's a known bug where it's not always holding that information there. I'll say disconnect. Add SQL Server, and we'll do history, and I'll say Windows DB, connection properties. We'll say connect, and we'll expand that now, databases, and there we go. So now I'm going to say, remember, I'm going to say schema compare. We haven't looked at this yet, but I've got a VM, a Linux VM that's running that I installed the cool new SQL Server for Linux. Ask me how long it took to install that.
How long did it take you to install
that? Around 2.5 minutes. So I was actually surprised. Wow. I sat down, I ran, I had the VM spun up, I ran a couple of scripts, got it going, and thought, I have installed SQL Server millions of times, SharePoint, all of those. It's always kind of an experience, a longer experience. So I started to get up from my desk to go and make a sandwich or something like that. So all I did was I got up, and as I started to walk away, I realized that the process was already finished. It was already installed. I couldn't believe it. It was so fast. So that got installed there. We're going to say select the target, because remember, what we're going to do is we're going to say we want this data to be moved over to Linux, and we want to change it to connect to Linux. So I'm going to say that is our destination, and I'll say OK. And so the first time we did this, it seems like we might have had an issue with this in session 2. Part of this might have broken, but in this one, we're going to do a compare and then an update. We're going to do a compare and update. What we ended up doing in session 2 was we just opened up the database project and did a publish.
Right, right. And by the way, I assume that I can use SQL Server Management Studio with SQL Server on Linux just as easily as I can.
Absolutely.
Sure.
In fact, initially to set everything up, that's what I did to verify mm-hmm. it, because I wanted to make sure that those hardcore database guys out there that want to use SSMS could do everything they wanted to, and they could. So here's what's going to happen here. Now it's going to say, hey, we've got this user. It's a little bit of a different user out there. I'm going to say I don't want to do anything with it. It's got a file group out there. I'm not going to do anything with it. So I'm going to say it did a compare. It sees that there's not this history table, that Tagger history table. I want to add that. I could have done other things here, but I deselected them. So we notice that that's all we want. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to say update. And what should happen here is it should then take that temporal table from session 2 and pop that in to Linux. Are you sure you want to update? I don't know, but I'm going to say yes.
But it's too late now.
Do you want to format your drive? Click OK. Yes. So that actually said it was already done. So that's pretty dang fast. Let's actually go out there and see if that's out there. I haven't expanded that. We might have that little bug where I have to come back in and reconnect that over here. In fact, I'll do that real quick.
Okay. While you do that, let me just mention, you talked about how quickly SQL Server for Linux installed, about 2.5 minutes. We haven't talked about one of the biggest pieces of news in Visual Studio 2017, which is the new install experience there. I think almost any developer who loves Visual Studio, like you and I do, has sometimes wondered, why does it take so long to install, uninstall, and stuff like that. You're going to be very, very pleased with the changes in 2017. And it's still changing a bit because it's just an RC. But the team heard loud and clear, saw the pain that developers were having, and worked really, really hard to fix that. So you'll be pleased with the new install experience and at how much more quickly Visual Studio installs as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So the cool thing about the install process there is it makes it really easy just to select categories of job descriptions or whatever. Say, I do this. Like there's even a data scientist sort of thing. I do this kind of stuff. Okay, so this went through the process. I was mistaken when I said that it already pushed it over because it was just the schema compare that got done.
Okay.
So it's fast, but not as fast as because I was actually surprised how fast that was. But let's do a refresh there. See if that got over there. So I don't see it there yet, which is just, it's either a bug or something. We've got a couple different ways that we can do this. Let's just do it the fun way, like we did it before. Well, let's see. We will go create a new project. Do it this way, because we got to have this over there. We've already been told we got to have this over there. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to just do one more update. So this is good for you guys to see this, because if you're using Visual Studio 2017 RC right now, this might happen to you. Mm-hmm. So it's good that you guys are seeing it, and you know that, I mean, we're not super excellent at anything, but at least we know what we're doing up here, and it's happening to us still. So we'll say finish. And I'll open up that. And we'll say add table. And I'll select a temporal table. You guys remember walking through this, and I'll say tags history. And we're going to change that to a unique identifier. And we're going to add label in here. And that's an nvar. Char. Do you say varchar or varchar? I always say varchar.
I say varchar.
Me too. Does that look about right to you? It's about what we had, not null, in there. So now remember what we can do is just say publish. We'll go in this direction. We will make it happen. If it doesn't like us doing it one direction, we'll do it the other direction. And again, it's not saving that. So we'll just say that, say okay, blah, blah, blah. And we'll just say, I'm not even going to generate the script. I know what it's going to do. Mm-hmm. So we'll just say publish here and see if that happens. But again, if you didn't watch in session two, we went out to generate script. We felt confident that all it was doing was what needed to be updated, what needed to be added. When we were publishing, it wasn't wiping tags and uploads out. It was just only doing tags history.
I like the way the concept of publishing has been used consistently here. We publish changes to databases. We publish to Azure. Which we've been able to do for a long time. We publish Docker, et cetera. I like the consistency, and I like the ease with which some of this can be done.
Yeah, so do I. I like that, as I mentioned in the intro slides, we've got this new uniform sort of publishing concept now, where wherever you want to go, you're just going to kind of have the same publishing experience. So let's just refresh that now and see. If it doesn't, we're not going to hold people up if that doesn't show up there. I hope that it does, because I know that this has worked a number of times mm-hmm. before. Why that's pulling that up, we'll let that refresh there, and I'll show everybody how it is that I am deciding which SQL Server to point to. I've just got this little helper in here, this platform helper. So one trick, you can do this a number of different ways, but one trick that I use to tell whether it's on Linux or Windows is I actually just look for a host name. So that environment variable host name does not exist does not exist on Windows. So if hostname is null, then I know that it's Windows. Otherwise, I know that it's Linux. So this is actually a really nice, easy way to tell. There are other ways that we can do things, but this way, when it checks the current platform, the current database checks the current platform to see if the platform is Linux, then it's going to load up that Linux connection string from back in the beginning, first session. We've got this, linuxdb.tagger.at. So that's taken a while to refresh there. I know that that's there. Let's just go ahead and publish that one more time. Remove that. We'll publish those updates one more time out there. And when this publishes, this will officially be running on Linux, talking to Linux, no dependencies at all on anything Windows at all. SQL Server for Linux, everything running on Linux, the ASP.NET Core. And I created all of this on a Windows machine, and everything's running on Linux. So that's going to be pretty cool.
Yeah.
So we'll let that pull up there.
Yeah, and when it does, and so that URL for the Linux version of the site was linux.tagger.it.
Tagger it.
Whereas tagger.it, it's still out there, still running on Windows,
correct,
right? So we can run the two side by side.
Yep.
And we can see that you can't tell from the outside which platform they're running on, right?
Yep.
Except for the little icon you put
on
there.
In fact, why don't we just do that real quick? It's going to pull this up. When it pulls that, it just ran the Docker commands, everything it needed to do. When it pulls that up, I'll pull up the other one side by side. We'll just take a look at them real quick. The only difference we should see is that the icon is different. One will have a Linux icon, one will have a Windows icon. But this has been a blast. This is really crazy that we were able to put all this together like this. I really hope that everybody's been having a good time. What I mostly hope is that you guys have gotten a lot of really good ideas from this. My goal is that this is why we chose to cover so many tools and technologies. By the way, if you go to Tagger and you click the About, it will show you a list of a number of the tools and technologies that we covered and a link directly to it to make it easy. But what I wanted people to do was say, holy smokes, number one, I had no idea all this stuff was out here. Number two, I had no idea that I could do this so easily. Number three, I had no idea that I could do all this and have it be cross-platform with ASP.NET. Because remember, as we talked about in the beginning, I talk to people all the time that say, the world I grew up in. People say, I want to do it on Notepad. I want a full idea. I want no idea. I want it to go to Mac. I want to do all this stuff. And we just proved that we could do that. There's hardly any scenario that we didn't touch. It's just beautiful. Just beautiful.
It is. It's like you said at the beginning, the world is changing pretty quickly here. So let me mention a couple of things, too, to the folks who are watching today. If you registered for the event, you will receive an email soon, probably within a couple of days, I think, although there is a weekend coming up, with a link that you can use to download all the source code here. Let's see, what else? Something else we were supposed to say.
Everybody will get the source code. Did we mention that everybody's going to get the source code? If you want the source code's going to be made available to everything. So...
yes, I know what it was. Also, in about 2 weeks, everything that we did here is going to be online as an MVA course, Microsoft Virtual Academy. It won't be just a recording of what we did live. Scott and I actually spent the last 2 days recording this so that it would look maybe more professional and more polished, and so that if things blew up, you know, we could fix that in the recording. But so about 2 weeks on Microsoft Virtual Academy, this will be available as a course. It's about 6 hours long. Same basic stuff, just maybe cleaned up a little bit.
Yep, exactly. So a couple more things before we finish up. I've just had a blast. I mean, I really have just had a blast. But a couple more things if we take a look at the last couple of slides. So we mentioned 24, I should have updated the slides, 24 tools, technologies in this, including some of the ones I've listed there. Remember, if you want an easy way to get to some of these, the reference material for this, go to tagger.it or linux.taggerit, be running on Linux. And if you go to the About page at the bottom, it's going to list a number of those that you could just link off to with documentation. Here's our call to action here. This could be really, really long, but if I were to say what should you do now, go out and download and install Visual Studio 2017 RC1. It's available to everybody. A lot of the folks that are watching right now have it. They've probably been messing with stuff while we've been talking. They've been trying to prove us wrong. Yep. And the links are in the Frequently Asked Questions tab. Does that make sense?
Yes, in the Fact tab. Yeah.
Yep, okay. Go out and get an Azure Developer subscription. There's folks that aren't out there. Get a free trial. You got to get a developer subscription, free subscription out there. Also go out and get a Power BI trial subscription. You said it when we were in this session, but I barely touched tip of the iceberg for Power BI, and start using Microsoft Cognitive Services. There's links in there, especially the two that we covered, Computer Vision API and Luis. So that's it.
It's been a great day. Scott, I want to thank you for the great job that you did building all this content, getting everything working. I know you've been working very closely with various teams here at Microsoft for several weeks. Working with nightly builds, just making everything worked great. Fantastic job. I appreciate it. And it's been a privilege to sit here beside you and help out what little I could.
Yeah, thank you very much. Again, Jeff Procise, thank you for coming out and helping. You guys at home, thanks. This has really just been a blast. You can get a hold of me at scott@liquiddaffodil.com or at GeekSmith on Twitter. You can get a hold of Jeff as well.
JeffPro@winelect.com or on Twitter, @JProcise.
Yep. And thanks again, and get back out there and get coding. It's enough goofing off. Now go do something for real out there. We'll see you next time.
Have a great weekend, everyone.